Welcome to another episode of Ideas Have Consequences with me, Larry Alex Taunton. And the idea that we are discussing today is the unwitting animal hierarchy that we apply to certain situations. And in this case, the situation is that of South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem.
South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is on the defense after strong backlash about a story of the governor shooting her dog.
She killed her dog and bragged about it in her book, and that may have killed Kristi Noem's political future.
Killing Cricket may have torpedoed Noem's chances of being named Donald Trump's running mate. She was a top-tier candidate.
One of the indicators, one of the hallmarks of a perverse society that is coming off the rails is that it will elevate animal life while simultaneously de-elevating human life. That's what happens. You worship one and you have little regard for the other. So right now what we're seeing in the world, what we're seeing in the United States is outrage over the killing of Cricket. But we have the World Economic Forum calling for the reduction of the human population on the planet by 6 to 7 billion people. Where's the outrage?
Human life is sacred and dogs' lives are not. They're precious, but they're not sacred. They're not made in the image of God. In the hierarchy of values, human life comes before canines.
I'm amazed that any Democrat can, with a straight face, criticize Kristi Noem when they have such little regard, not just for children, but for human beings in general. They have almost no regard for human beings. Today, we're going to be talking about Kristi Noem, and we're going to be talking about what I'll call Puppygate. Now, by the time this episode airs, I would hope that the issue that we're talking about will have died down just a little bit. And she tells the story in an upcoming book of shooting her 14-month-old dog, Cricket, in the head. And this has a lot of people upset, both left, right, and center. And as I have listened to the controversy, watch it unfold in media, on social media, it's been quite fascinating to me to pick up something here that's unspoken. And in fact, most people are not even aware that they're doing it, that I think is very instructive. Now, I want to say this from the outset, that this episode isn't really about Kristi Noem. I'm not trying to make an argument that she should or shouldn't have a political future. I'm not making an argument about what sort of governor she is. I'm not making an argument about her particular policies. It is rather that this Puppygate, as I'll call it, I'm surprised somebody else hasn't already called it that. I think I'm the first to call it Puppygate, but maybe if I went on social media, I would see that everybody's calling it that and I just haven't seen it. But this Puppygate affords us the opportunity to do what I think we do best, and that is to reveal to you some of the ideas that are driving public conversation, public policy, and public action. So it goes something like this. I think everybody on God's green earth has by now heard the story of how Noem, she tells this story, by the way, in a book that will be released this week. She tells the story of how she was visiting the ranch. And we should say this, Kristi Noem, in addition to being the governor of South Dakota, she is also a rancher. And she was visiting, as I understand it, because again, the book isn't out yet. So I'm simply going off of media reports excerpts as it relates to the book. But she was visiting a fellow rancher, and her 14-month-old dog escaped from her pickup truck and began attacking and killing the chickens of this fellow rancher. And this rancher, as Noem says, was greatly distressed by what was happening, this carnage, you know, that was taking place right in front of her. And Noem, of course, as any sensible dog owner would try to do in this kind of situation, she tried to stop it. She tried to stop Cricket, her dog, from killing all of these chickens that it must have found finger-licking good. I couldn't resist that. And in the process, Noem says that the dog, Cricket, turned and bit her, and that she decided, she says this, at that moment, I realized I had to put her down. Now, things escalated from there, and that, of course, is exactly what she did. She took the dog out into the forest, and she shot the dog in the head. Now, this story, as I say, is in her upcoming book, No Going Back, The Truth on What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. Can your savings weather an economic storm? Think about what you've put away for the future. Inflation can render cash worthless. Real estate can crash like it did in 2008. Economies built on a mountain of debt fall like a house of cards. There are very few physical assets you can invest in that stand the test of time. Gold has stood as a valued form of money for millennia. It's why people are flocking to it now and why Birch Gold is busier than ever. Through a little-known tax loophole, Birch Gold lets you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA in physical gold. And the best part is it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. To learn more, text IDEAS to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? If not, call the people I trust, Birch Gold. Text IDEAS to 989898 and secure your savings today. What's wrong with Kristi Noem's editor? That's a question I want to know. What's wrong with Kristi Noem's editor? Because desensitized though Americans are to the annihilation of the unborn, this is a story that few Americans would be able to properly categorize. Take, for example, this fact that I'm going to share with you is something that Kristi Noem and her editor ought to have been aware of before including this story in the book. And by the way, the story is apparently several pages long. But according to Pew Forum, 65.1 million U.S. households own a dog, and 97% of American pet owners consider their pets to be a member of their family. So inclusion of this story, some have said that it was very stupid of her to include the story. I think it isn't because she's stupid. I think it's because Kristi Noem failed to read the room, the country, as it were, beyond the confines of a working ranch or farm where animals are killed with great regularity. And that would include dogs in some instances. She assumed that a story like this would resonate with Americans. And by the way, if you aspire to national public office, a failure to read the room is something you just simply can't do on a topic as big as this one is. You say, big, Larry, it's a story of a dog. Well, it's a major gaffe because Americans, as I say, we all operate off of a subconscious animal hierarchy, and I'll come to that in just a moment. But Americans are people who get far more upset over a story like this than they do, as I say, the annihilation of the unborn or proxy wars with Russia or corruption in Ukraine. They're far more troubled by this. Take, for example, the story of Walter Palmer. Remember this guy, Walter Palmer? He's from Minnesota. And in 2015, he was hunting in Zimbabwe at a national park there. Not legally, it was an organized hunt. And he shot with an arrow Cecil the lion, posted pictures of it online. And people went nuts over this, just as they did with Kristi Noem. So you would think that Kristi Noem would have better sense than to do this because social media was made for moments like this. I mean, just as Walter Palmer was gift and memed and canceled by the social media culture, that is now precisely what is happening to Kristi Noem. She ought to have known better before she put something like this out there. Again, American. And by the way, killing animals that have names is just something you don't do. Cecil the lion. If you're hunting, you're culling the lion population, please don't shoot one that's named. Kristi Noem might have done better not to mention the name of the dog, Cricket. Cricket sounds so cute. It sounds so lovable. and Kristi Noem shot Cricket in the head. Americans are more troubled, as I say, by cruelty to animals or what they perceive to be cruelty to animals than they are almost anything else. Almost anything else. We are a country that, honestly, we're a little overboard in this regard. I have mentioned online, you know, I've seen some of these videos online where people are, say, trying to put a great white shark back into the ocean. And I think to myself, why? Shoot it in the head. Why would you do this? We're just going to put it back in the ocean and let it swim down the beach and, you know, bite some kid's leg off. But you see people doing this. And part of the reason that people do it is I think that they see it as a mark, an indication of their own moral superiority over those people who aren't animal lovers. Now, I say this as somebody who is an animal lover. Anybody who watches this podcast regularly, who follows me on social media, will know that my German Shepherd Ranger is a fixture in my commentary. He really is, and he figures into the commentary today. I love dogs. I love, generally speaking, most animals. The idea of shooting one in the head would be extremely difficult for me to do. That said, I do recognize that it's not, as some would have it, a sign of my own moral superiority. It's more indicative of the fact that I, and Americans in general, are affluent enough that we are able to have pets, able to have animals that we care for, that we feed, that we spend tremendous amounts of money in veterinary bills, that we buy special foods for. I spent part of my morning today dressing a wound on Ranger's leg. He has a hot spot. You know, they just turn and lick and lick and lick. And I have been doing my very best, spending an inordinate amount of time to try to keep him from infecting that leg. And it's because I love Ranger. I love my dog. But the fact is, Ranger serves no practical function within my own household, except for the fact that he's a companion. He's a friend. He is a source of amusement to me and to my family. This is not always true the world over when it comes to pets, when it comes to animals. I recall some years ago a Nigerian friend of mine visiting and seeing the way Ranger was cared for. And he said, you know, pets in your country are cared for better than people in my own country. It's a billion-dollar industry in the United States. As I've said, 97% of pet owners in the United States consider their pets to be a part of the family. That's who we are. Did you see this week there was someone took a picture of a flyer that was being handed out in a neighborhood, undoubtedly by Democrats, that said, please keep your dogs indoors because we want to be sensitive to the Muslims who live in our neighborhood because they consider dogs to be unclean. So I wonder if there would be this level of controversy if, say, Ilhan Omar had shot the dog. I would suggest, I mean, certainly conservatives would complain about it, but I don't think we'd have heard a word from the Democrats, you know, who have complained about this. They would have called it diversity. Or what if one of these undocumented immigrants that has entered into the United States from somewhere in, say, Africa or Asia had eaten it? Dog meat is very popular in Asia, and apparently in San Francisco. I mean, this is pretty common. Eating dogs is, so if let's say Kristi Noem's dog had disappeared because the Chinese undocumented immigrants living on the farm next door had decided to make a snack out of it, conservatives would have complained about that. I don't think Democrats would have said a word about it. But they've seized upon it here to say how barbaric Kristi Noem is, and by extension, how barbaric, what's implied in all this, is how barbaric red state people are. Red Staters are all brutes. The information I'm about to share with you might shock you. Right now, there is a silent epidemic affecting 100 million Americans that nobody wants to talk about. It's called fatty liver. We throw everything at our livers. Cholesterol, alcohol, toxins, heavy metals, statins, cigarettes. That's why so many of us have a sluggish, fatty liver that makes us gain weight and lose energy. Fatty liver also affects our sleep quality and may be a risk to our heart health. That's why it's important to start protecting your liver today. You can do so with Liver Health Formula. It's an all-natural supplement which contains 11 clinically proven botanicals that help recharge and protect your liver. This company already has helped more than 2 million fellow Americans with their products. Try Liver Health Formula by going to getliverhelp.com/Larry and claim your free bonus gift. That's getliverhelp.com/Larry. Democrats have no moral foundation upon which to stand to condemn Kristi Noem for shooting this dog. Kristi Noem clearly believes that children are far more valuable than our dogs. Democrats are reversed in that. They're absolutely reversed when it comes to this. But there is a lesson to be learned here as it applies to the way people, whether it's Democrats, Republicans, Europeans, Americans, South America, it doesn't matter, men, women, we all have a subconscious animal hierarchy that we employ in situations like this. And it comes out because if you read the story carefully as it is reported or have just listened to what I've said here already about the story carefully, then you will know that it wasn't just Noem's dog, Cricket, that was killed here. It was, there were two kinds of animals that were killed, a dog and chickens. But no one is morally outraged by the killing of these chickens. Where's the justice for the chickens? No one cares about the chickens. You see, that's your unwitting animal hierarchy at work. You have judged dogs to be more valuable than chickens. You're not outraged by the killing of chickens. I mean, unless you're some kind of PETA type, you're outraged by the killing of a dog. Why would you be more outraged by the killing of a dog than you would be by chickens? Because dogs are cute. They're companions. Chickens seldom are. I mean, I know there are instances where somebody might have a pet chicken, but generally speaking, that's not the case. We eat chickens. We Americans traditionally don't eat dogs. That's why you're morally outraged. But I'm not sure that you have any kind of moral standing when it comes to an objection of that kind. So people who are objecting to the killing of the dog, they're applying this kind of animal hierarchy. But Kristi Noem, like ranchers the world over, is also applying an animal hierarchy. And hers is absolutely reversed. In her animal hierarchy, a dog, even a pet, is less valuable than his stock, livestock. And that is because a dog that kills livestock is not long for the world. Those people who would say that she needs to retrain the dog or she needs to rehouse the dog are people who don't know what they're talking about and don't understand the complexities of rural farm and ranch life, where, by the way, those things exist, ranches and farms exist for the very purpose of raising and killing and eating things. That's what happens. Alf White, who was a country veterinarian, he wrote a series of books called All Creatures Great and Small, All Things Bright and Beautiful, All Things Wise and Wonderful, Lord God Made Them All. I think it's a series of four books. He wrote them over the course of 15 years or so. They were bestsellers. And his real name, by the way, or rather Alf White is his real name. His name in the series is James Herriot. He took the pseudonym James Herriot, and it became a hugely popular, not just a book series, but it became a hugely popular BBC television series that ran in the 1970s into the 1980s. And now it's been redone. And this new one that's out is just as good. The characters are a little different, but you have to let them be what they are. And it's fabulous. This series is terrific. And the stories in each episode are based on real things that happened. And one of them that Lori and I recently watched, which is very applicable here, is that a guy has a something like a collie, let's say. And it's a wonderful family pet. And he opens the door and lets the dog run around. And anyway, he finds himself looking for the dog and he finds the dog. And at the same time, while this practice is, you know, attempting to help him find his lost dog, there are sheep, farmer sheep are being killed. And they begin to put the two pieces together that the dog, when it gets out, this wonderful pet, has fallen in with other dogs, a pack of dogs, that is now going around and hunting sheep. Not to eat them, they're just killing them for sport. And the law of England at the time, this is 1930s, 1940s, probably still true today, specified that the dog had to be put down. A dog like Christy Gnome's being put down in a rural setting, this is quite common. It's very common. Don't think you should include that story in your book, but anyway, that sort of thing is quite common. Now, I want to illustrate this issue like this. And again, part of what I'm trying to get out today to help you understand is that we are so warped in our thinking about human beings and where they rank. And this is Romans 1, because Romans 1 tells us, Romans 1 verses 18 through 32, it tells us that one of the indicators, one of the hallmarks of a perverse society that is coming off the rails is that it will elevate animal life while simultaneously de-elevating human life. That's what happens. You worship one and you have little regard for the other. So right now, what we're seeing in the world, what we're seeing in the United States is outrage over the killing of cricket, but we have the World Economic Forum calling for the reduction of the human population on the planet by 6 to 7 billion people. Where's the outrage? We express it here on this show, and I have colleagues who express it on their own show, but I don't see that social media is terribly up in arms over the killing of human beings, the calling for the killing of human beings. What's going on there? Well, it's a sign of how perverse we are as a people. I find this all fascinating because as I sit back and I watch all of this play out, I'm amazed that any Democrat can, with a straight face, criticize Christy Gnome when they have such little regard, not just for children, but for human beings in general. They have almost no regard for human beings. Do they not see that? Can they not see that this is so inconsistent? It's so odd. But I also think conservatives are wrong here. And it's because what this controversy reveals, and by the way, I would suggest it's maybe conservatives who are more critical of Christy Gnome than are people on the left. I mean, the Babylon Bee, for heaven's sake, got in on this with a headline that said, Christy Gnome clarifies killing puppies makes up only 3% of what she does. So, you know, they're outraged by what she did here, but I would suggest that they're wrong too. And it is because where we are typically talking about the divide in America being between red states and blue states, this reveals that the divide is actually between urbanites and suburbanites and people who live in rural areas. That's where the real divide is. And there would have been a time where Americans would have instinctively understood how to process this. And they would have, because up until 1920, get this, up until 1920, the majority of Americans lived in rural areas. The majority of Americans lived in rural areas. As of 2020, according to the census in 2020, only 14% of Americans live in rural areas. That tells you that they don't really have any clue, have any real understanding of the operations of a ranch or a farm, or the realities, the stark realities that those who operate them are faced with, where your own cute sentimentality simply doesn't factor in and has no place. It simply cannot. And for very good reason. So America has shifted massively. And there was a time as well where Americans were once required to read novels like Wilson Rawls, Where the Red Fern Grows, and John Steinbeck's The Red Pony, and H.G. Wells' essay, Shooting an Elephant. I mean, there are others that I could name, but these are ones that come immediately to mind because they were ones that I was required to read. I was required to read them all. And as a somewhat of a city slicker, they clashed with my own, you know, born free sentimentality because I loved animals. I loved pets. And you read those stories, which deal with the harsh realities of rural living, and you find yourself wrestling with these moral questions. There was a time when American children were exposed to these things, where they watched Old Yeller, where they would know about these kinds of things and would also know that while they don't like them, they are sometimes the thing that has to be done. They are the thing that has to be done. Many of you will know of instances where you had to put down an animal. And maybe you weren't in a situation where it was always easy to do it, where you took it into the vet. Maybe you couldn't even afford to do that. Not everybody can. These people who say that she should have relocated the dog. Have you ever been in South Dakota? I mean, my wife is from South Dakota. And I will tell you this idea that somehow Christy Noem should have, you know, spent the remainder of her day trying to relocate the dog, find somebody who wanted the dog, a humane society, something of this nature. To me, that just shows your ignorance, that you have no real idea what rural living is like. Now, if you have the time to do that, then good for you. But don't think of it as a sign of your own moral superiority over Christy Noem or over other ranchers. It just means you have the luxury, the time to do it. In the third world, they would just shoot the dog. And by and large, they don't see them as pets anyway. But there was also a time where Americans didn't just simply read literature like this or watch movies like Old Yeller, but where they were grounded in scripture. And in God's law, we see that animals that do harm to human beings must be put down according to God's law. They must be put down. And it was that along with the sacrificial system, you know, the whole sacrificial lamb, it was painful, often painful. And it was meant to be a reminder, not only the cost of sin in when we're speaking of a sacrifice, but it was also a reminder that human beings in God's hierarchy of things, human beings are intrinsically more valuable than animals. And I would suggest to you that we have completely slipped our moorings in the United States and we no longer really understand that basic fact. We live in a country where if you are involved in the transport of an eagle's parts or feathers or eggs, you can be fined up to $250,000 and go to jail for 5 years. But you could kill your own offspring with government assistance. I want to encourage everyone to join our newsletter. That's join.larrytaunton.com. Now, why is that important? Well, because it helps us to maintain contact with you apart from big tech. So whenever there's a new interview, a podcast, a video short, a live, we have the ability to contact you directly without going through big tech. So you can join that by going to join.larrytaunton.com. Joining me on the show now is Steve Dace, who is the host of the creatively named Steve Dace Show. And Steve, Christy Noem, all of this controversy surrounding her, she's a puppy killer, as some would put it. What's your take on this whole thing?
Well, I think there are two separate issues, Larry. I think on one hand, there is an element of people who maybe have not lived in a rural community or, you know, never read Old Yeller. Okay. And so there's part of that. But then I think that the larger narrative here, and hey, I'll just say, you know, for interest of full disclosure, you know, we've had one family puppy, our beloved Bichon Cap. He's turning 12. He's got dementia. He's struggling to get up and down the stairs. He's walking into walls. Okay. He's waking up like at 3 a.m. every night.
You know? Is his name Biden?
And, you know, we're having these conversations about, we think it's too early, but we don't want him to suffer. So, you know, what's the, you know, having to put a pet down is an excruciating thing that is part of owning a pet for most of us. But that's a separate issue from the fact that this woman has, in the last 2 years, essentially just taken cringe to just, well, cringy levels, okay? Whether it's an adultery scandal with Corey Lewandowski that all kinds of national publications were writing about. She sold out women athletes in her state because a big donor wanted her to. She did this strange infomercial about a month ago. I played the whole thing on my show.
I saw it. It is cringe.
It is. I mean, and with these like really weird extreme close-ups of her mouth, like Pete Rose on
TV. I didn't even know that politicians could do that.
I know. Here's the thing too. This actually was done in Texas, another state. She's not even promoting a local dentist. Okay. And so it's like Pete Rose from 1990 QVC called and said, no. Okay. And now let me show you that I'm some kind of rural badass this dog nipped me and I threw it in a gravel pit and I shot it. It's the oddest campaign I have ever seen to try and raise your level of stature for what's clearly being timed for, you know, either in the expectation of being Trump's running mate or to elevate her profile to that end, because a book is coming out. You know, from, you know, books, even now, especially nowadays with all the shortages, these things have to be planned like well over a year in advance. So this is all very coordinated, and I just find it the absolute most cringy publicity campaign for a politician that I've ever seen. And this is in an era where self-awareness is dead. It's dead. It's dead as Kristi Noem's dog. There is no self-awareness in America at all. And even by that standard, brother, this is just beyond. This is Jonah Hill GIF levels of cringe. Stop, please stop. Okay. And so what I also think is happening is there's a lot of people on the right in various factions, MAGA, establishment, all kinds of places. Everybody now, Trump is king. Everybody wants their prince or princess at court to be the running mate. Okay. And so there's a lot of people that I also think are anxious to use this as a means by which to try and eliminate her from VP consideration because they have somebody else in mind.
I agree with all of that. And though I will say this, given the fact that your dog, that I will nickname Biden, needs, it seems, to be euthanized, you could save yourself a few bucks. I mean, you're in Iowa. Noam is a short drive away.
True.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I'm sure for a few bucks, she'd be willing to help you out. I agree.
Dude,
with
for a few bucks, Noam might be willing to put me down with the amount of memes about her I've shared this week, brother. But anyway, go ahead. Yes.
Well, and that's what caught my attention, and I decided to reach out to you because I thought this might be, and is proving to be, an amusing conversation. We can have a little bit of fun with this because I agree with you that Noam, you know, listen, I saw her, I don't know, just a few short years ago as a rising superstar. Mm-hmm. She was an all-American girl. She seemed to have really good sense. She seemed to be a genuine conservative who represented red state America, the values of just regular, ordinary, decent Americans. And I have to agree with you that I don't know what it was, a tooth whitening commercial or whatever it was that she was doing. I thought, I don't know that I've ever seen a politician, certainly a governor, do a commercial like this, which seems to be a kind of conflict of interest. Maybe the reason she did it out of state is so that she couldn't be accused of, you know, some kind of quid pro quo in state. But I agree that that was odd. And then she's clearly, you know, Botoxed up. And then you have now this story. And yes, she absolutely abandoned female athletes in her state, which I didn't see coming.
Neither did I.
I didn't see coming because, as I say, early on,
Larry, she did that on the heels of flipping the bird to the feds on COVID, right?
Yes.
So that was the harder fight. The data was being assembled in real time. A lot of us, even those of us who were pushing back on it, like I was, really had no idea what the counter narrative was. We were learning this all in real time. So you do that and then turn around and sell out on like the first basic truth of existence. What's a man and what's a woman blows my mind. Yes, go ahead.
And does not reflect the values of her state. My wife is from South Dakota. I was just in South Dakota just a few short months ago. Your average South Dakotan is not going to hold to that alphabet mafia, you know, view on what's happening in sports and elsewhere. So, yes, I thought that was very strange because she seemed to be the female Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. I mean, she looked like, you know, just a meteoric kind of rise. Mm-hmm. And I probably said back then she would probably be Trump's vice presidential, you know, running mate. The question I have to ask as it relates to this, you've written books, I've written books. Where was the editor? What do you think was going on in the minds of the editor here?
I've asked myself that question too. And the only thing I can think of is that she really wanted this out there to indicate, you know, I'm a regular person, rural America, salt of the earth, and just misread the room. I mean, there are things that, you know, you do in certain settings in life that are requirements. You know, my mom was a nurse. One time when I was a kid, we had to move from our nice home in Kissimmee, Florida, to Syracuse, New York, because she took a lucrative job doing in-home nursing care for an elderly individual. And that was laudable work my mom did. It also included changing his diapers, bedpans. I mean, that's not necessarily, and I changed this old man's bedpans and wiped his rectum. You're not going to put that in your memoir, okay? I mean, why would you put those details out there? And yeah, there are things we all have to do. That's part of the human existence and experience in different walks of life where maybe, you know, there are things that just require a certain amount of an abandonment of decorum, shall we say. But to decide
which nurses do, by the way,
want to read, I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Being married to a nurse, by the way, do not go out with two nurses to dinner because they do talk about these things. I have zero decorum when it comes to this because it's so regular for them and it's disgusting. You have to warn them in advance. I'm not going if you're going to talk about that kind of stuff.
Nice.
I think that Noam, I tend to agree with you here. I think that Noam clearly wanted this story in there. According to The Guardian, the book isn't out yet, but it will be in just a few short days. According to The Guardian, this story is, I don't know, two or three pages in the telling. And seems to be something that she wants in there to reflect that she is a woman who is willing to make very difficult choices. Now, I don't so much have a real problem with the fact that she killed the dog. People who live in, you know, the urbanites don't really have any understanding of what farm life is like. Mm-hmm. Farmers, ranchers are not in a witness protection program a business. They're not relocating dogs. You go to South Dakota, Iowa, you recognize how far apart these farms are, the fact that most people would have a fairly similar mentality and the idea that you could deprogram a dog like this. Once they've tasted blood, I find it's almost any veterinarian or rancher would tell you that it's virtually impossible mm-hmm. to deprogram them of it. You just simply can't. That said, the failure to read the room, as it were, the country beyond the confines of a working ranch or farm, to me is the greater problem here because it's a sin, so to speak, that no politician who aspires to national office can be guilty of. They simply have to be able to have their finger on the pulse of the nation. And it's amazing to me that she would know that this is the kind of story that while this happens every day on farms and ranches the world over, in contrast to what Meghan McCain claims. Mm-hmm. The reality is most people who live in urban settings simply cannot conceive of it, and they can't conceive of it because they can't think of a scenario in which a dog is in some way a threat to their livelihood.
Well, I mean, going back again to our own situation with our own beloved Bichon, that's one of our considerations. We have our first granddaughter. She's a month old. In a few months, she'll be crawling around. Okay, as Cap's dementia, accelerates. Well, he cuddled with the kids and slept with them his entire life. Well, now he's not the same dog that he used to be all the time. Will there be a moment where he might view this little thing crawling around the floor, that's kind of his domain, as a threat? Will he act on that? These are conversations and questions that we are having within the confines of our own family with our own vet, because human life is sacred and dogs' lives are not. They're precious, but they're not sacred. They're not made in the image of God. In the hierarchy of values, human life comes before canines. But here's the thing, though. We're back to the point of why. You stood up to COVID. If you want to show people you can make the tough call, just make the entire thing about how you gave Anthony Fauci the middle finger salute. Just do that. There's no other, you don't have to do any. And we often talk about urban people not understanding or elites not understanding the commoners, urbans not understanding what life is like in the rural. I wonder if this is an example of where it goes the other way too. Okay. Let's say nothing happened between Kristi Noem and Corey Lewandowski. I have no idea if it did. It just was in every major publication a couple of years ago. You have to understand, and now maybe this isn't, you're not in South Dakota anymore. You have to understand you're a successful, attractive woman and a threat to the system, all right? You have to understand when you show up at every public function with a man, not your wife, not your husband, you're going to feed narratives of people. So let's say it's all false. You at least have to have the self-awareness of understanding you're going to make your detractors' case for them by your husband being nowhere to be found, and you travel everywhere around the country with a guy that you're not married to. Have some self-awareness. You're going to go do an infomercial with close-ups of your mouth, like, hi, I'm Chris, like she's me, like I'm a podcaster in the middle of it. Let me tell you about my friends at Backyard Butchers. Okay, they do great meat. What's next in the middle of the state address? And guys, before I tell you what my tax plan is, I just need you to know, outstanding work. I mean, come on. Some you're laughing because it's preposterous. Yeah. And so yes, the elites don't understand what life is like down out here in the real world. Yes. If you live in urban areas, you don't know what life's really like in the rural. But I think this pendulum swings both ways at times. And I think we're at the very least dealing with a woman from South Dakota who's out of her league, just out of her depth, and doesn't really understand what it truly means to be a national standard bearer, despite her craven attempts to become one.
So what do you think this means for her political future?
I didn't think there was much of a future there after what's gone on before. And I just think that this is, like I said at the top, there's a lot of different factions now that want their person. We're dealing with a guy who's in a coin flip election. And even if he wins, he's a lame duck. He can't run again. So the next primary cycle, I know everybody wants to hear this, not. But the next primary cycle, guys, regardless of what happens in November, starts the day after the election, okay? And so everybody wants their rep in that prime position of being the person that Trump says, this is my son or daughter in whom I am well pleased, and hands them the hat and the scepter. And there's a lot of different people that want their person in that position for a lot of different reasons. And the last thing you want to present right now is negatives. And she's presented quite a few.
She really has. And what's interesting to me is her defense so far, at least what I've seen on Twitter, is almost a continuation of the same problem. It's a failure to really read the country and how people are responding to this. I mean, as it's not just simply Democrats who are attacking her on this. Mm-hmm. Her defense against Democrats is actually a pretty easy one, is to say, I mean, you're the people who are okay with the, lopping off of penises of little boys and turning them into little girls. Mm-hmm. And you have no problem with the annihilation of the unborn. Please spare me your outrage, your faux outrage. But she's getting, we have Babylon Bee lampooning her as a puppy killer. This story has upset an awful lot of people. And listen, we were chatting just before we came on air. You told me you're born in Iowa. I'm going to guess if you were not raised on a ranch or a farm, you've certainly have been on quite a few. Mm-hmm. I certainly have, and I have witnessed a great many things that I do not want to talk about on air, but that I wouldn't call an ethical
Correct.
Wrong.
Yeah.
I would simply say that they were the within the confines of that economy and that world, they make absolute sense. In my own sentimentality, love of animals is actually a liability in that world.
I mean, if you wanted to make an example or draw a metaphor from your farm life, you wouldn't pick something like, and you know what? I watched these two horses mate. And let me tell you what this is like in depth. And draw some, you wouldn't do that. You're laughing again because that's, you're right. It's necessary for the horses to mate to perpetuate the species. But dude, that's actually the best abstinence message ever created. You want to stop your teenagers from having sex? Take them out to watch a horse out to stud and let them get a glimpse of that. And they'll say, see you on the wedding night. I'm out. Okay. Pour one out. 5,000 G. All right. So again, why would you choose this to, it's not that, I don't think it's even that she euthanized your dog. But this is you've been governor of a state. You've made major decisions. But let me tell you, what really proves I'm a badass is that I shot a dog. I think that's what's the kind of the offensive part to it. That it's not that, you know, like I start swelling up tears thinking about if I've got to make a decision in a month or 3 months about what to do with Cap. All right. After we're eventually going to have to put him down. When I walk out of there, man, I'm not going to jump on and say, let me tell you, man, I made the tough call. I put the dog. I'm not going to do that. No one brags about that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's disturbing to people. That is something we do that is not one of the shiny objects of our humanity. And why you would choose to use that as a launching point, to brand yourself, it's just cringe.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. There's no question. Thinking about the political landscape and where we're going here, I'll go off topic just a little bit, but I have been maintaining on this show that I believe Trump will win. I think he'll win in a landslide. I mean, they won't report that, but I think that he will win. We'll see more election shenanigans, but I'm making a distinction between him winning and actually taking office. I think Democrats are prepared to burn the whole country to the ground to prevent him from taking office. And the example I use is this, Steve, is, growing up in the neighborhood, there always seemed to be, you always had unwritten rules in the games that you were playing. You know, we self-regulated when we played baseball or football or basketball. There was no referee, no umpire out there. We self-regulated. Yeah, I was out of bounds. Yeah, I fouled him. Mm-hmm. That's the way it worked. Ghost man on second, you know, this kind of thing. And then occasionally there were fights, but even with the fights, there were unwritten rules mm-hmm. that everybody observed. I don't remember any discussion, but there was always a kid in the neighborhood who was prepared to escalate beyond what those unwritten rules were. So you're going at it, and typically you fight, and you're done in a few minutes, and you're friends, and you're playing again. But there was always some kid who was prepared to pick up a rock or a bat or something. To me, that kid, that's the Democrat.
Yes.
I mean, that's what they're prepared.
Yes.
That's what they're prepared to do. Whatever you do, they are going to escalate one beyond you. And I think that's what's coming in November. Do you agree with that?
Wholeheartedly. Now, let's say that, first of all, your analogy, perfect. What you're basically describing in the ecosystem of youth sports, and I grew up in that same generation, so I know what you're talking about. The worst thing to be called was a cheater. The worst. All right. Why? Because what you described is what I call a social compact. There was an honor code is another way of putting it. Okay. And within that social compact, if you're going to be a part of that subculture or that ecosystem, there are rules of engagement. There are things you just don't do. You don't rub another man's rhubarb, bros before hoes, all the stuff we said to each other back when we were kids, right? Okay.
You don't, yes, of course.
You don't cross certain lines. And when you do, you are risking your place within that ecosystem. And there could be drastic consequences, maybe corporal, as you mentioned. There were fights, literally. These things had to be settled. Okay. What's happened now in our way, in our political life, we have a social compact too. All right. The Constitution is not the social compact. It is the itemization of it, the quantification of it. The social compact are its first words. We, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, this is now the honor code of how we will settle our differences and relate to one another. All right. With the Democrats have already made that a dead letter. All right. So they don't abide by any of that. And this, I saw an Emerson poll today, and you may or may not know, I keep track of all this stuff. I can tell you the most accurate, I keep track of it cycle to cycle. I keep files on this stuff. Emerson's one of the best pollsters we have publicly right now. They came out with a swing state poll today that had Trump ahead in all seven of the major swing states. But here's the problem. He's got to win one of these four, Nevada, Michigan, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin. He cannot get to 270 without winning one of those four. In those four, he's up by a point or two. I'm just telling you right now, there is no way they're not going to fortify the election in those states where they have total control. In 2000, and just to give your audience so they don't feel like anybody thinks you're into fever dreams or you're just doomsaying or engagement farming for the conspiracies, let me give you a real world situation. The final Real Clear Politics polling average. So this is the amalgamation of all the major polls, all right? The final Real Clear Politics polling average in the Michigan gubernatorial race had Gretchen Whitmer ahead by 1 point over Tudor Dixon. One. That was the final RCP average. On election night, she won by 10 points. 10.
Yeah.
10. If you think Donald Trump is going to win Michigan by 1 point, then you're really telling me he won it by 5, okay? Because there's no way Gretchen Whitmer, if she can, they control all the election infrastructure everywhere, all the counters, all the rules, all the votes, everything. Same thing with the Democrats in Pennsylvania. You see, it's not cheating, brother. If you get to pick both teams' players, if you get to choose which media gets to cover the events and tell them what it is that they get to say, and it's your fans in the stands and your handpicked referees. That's not, well, nobody stole anything according to the rules. Well, you're making all the rules. And that's what they have. And for all the money that's been raised on our side, kvetching about this for the last 4 years. And I say this as someone, election night on the Blaze, I'm sitting there for 9 hours, me and Glenn Beck by ourselves. And I'm one of the very first people live on the air pointing out what's happening in places like Antrim County, Michigan, my home state. This is not right. I've worked on presidential campaigns. I know the symmetry of elections. Something's not right here. The next morning, when I called this out, I got the entire Blaze channel demonetized by Facebook. Not just my show, the whole damn network. That's like seven figures of money. So I say this as someone that's been calling this out from the night of the last election. But we've done nothing meaningful to push back on this. Nothing. We've not done anything meaningful in any court that would actually stop them. We've not done it. We've not built up our own ballot harvesting operation to try to even counter it. And so we've got a turnout disadvantage, even if they don't cheat, just because of they've got a well-oiled machine. And then on top of that, you're going to tell me that we got to come away with he's going to have to win those comfortably. Well, Stevie did that in 2016. He barely won, which is why they've done everything they've done since, so that would never, ever happen again. And what happened the next time? You know, we always talked about it's a miracle Trump won the four decisive states by less than 78,000 votes. Joe Biden won one of the 15 bellwether counties, one of them. He won all the decisive swing states by less than 40,000 votes. And it just so happened that in the communities where he needed to get the highest amount of vote, where they kept counting votes until they had what they wanted, and it was all absentee, and none of them got turned down, they were all filled out perfectly. He just so happened to get the votes that he needed out of Fulton County to win Georgia. And he just so happened to get the votes out of Maricopa County he needed to win Arizona. And he just so happened to get the votes out of Wayne County that he needed to win Michigan. And Milwaukee County to win Wisconsin. And Philadelphia County to win Pennsylvania. Hot damn, Larry. I got to swear, these are the luckiest sons of bitches I've ever seen. I mean, it's amazing. They're just able. They went to Vegas with their last paycheck and the mortgage on the line. Bet it all on black. And it hit. It hit in Pennsylvania, it hit in Arizona, it hit in Georgia, it hit in Michigan, it hit in Wisconsin. Luckiest sons of bitches I've ever seen. Have them fill out your lottery card for you. That's what you have to believe this thing wasn't stolen. That's what you have to believe.
So, Steve, I take it that you believe the election was stolen.
Is it?
You know, so
But is it stealing if you get to make all the rules and determine how the rule and your people get to determine how the rules are interpreted? Is it stealing then?
Yeah, no, listen, I think you're absolutely dead on. I've seen nothing to give me the impression that Republicans are prepared to push back on this at all. The border is still wide open. We still have, I just came back from South America where I was covering this pretty closely, and they're flying these illegals in all over the states. And that, of course, is very targeted, where they want to place them, where they want to move them to, how they want to rig the Electoral College and harvest the ballots. We've done nothing to stop any of that kind of stuff. And yet we keep having these MAGA rallies, and as if to think that somehow our enthusiasm is going to be what carries us through the election.
There are things we, you know, and I'm a Christian, even though I didn't necessarily talk like one for the last 5 minutes. My apologies. I get worked up about this. Injustice ticks me off. So forgive my colorful language there. But, you know, the Christian ethic is that you focus on your own peccadilloes before other people's. Judgment begins in the house of God first. You have to meet your own standard first. The classic line everybody knows, why worry about the speck of dust in your brother's eye when you have a beam in your own? So because of that, I have a tendency to focus on our own side, where we're at. I can't control what they're going to do over there. I can't. I have some limited with the platform I have, some limited control over what we're going to do. And so I don't want to waste my time. I'd make more money if I just focused on Chuckle Hut stuff, talking about them. But I want to beat them. I don't want to just have a nice house. I want to beat them so my kids and grandkids can have a nice house one day too. All right. And the things that we say sometimes to one another just are completely contradictory. For example, nothing matters. The election will get stolen anyway. So there's absolutely nothing we can do, but Trump's the only one who can win. That doesn't make any sense. And because of that, we do a very poor job of getting action from our own people, holding them accountable on any level whatsoever. I mean, God bless Charlie Kirk. I've been in a situation. There were moments on the Cruz campaign, as much as I love Ted, I thought our strategy was so bad and no one was listening to me. I just still had my show at the time. I went public and just expressed my internal angst on the show, hoping to get people's attention. He did this a few weeks ago, I saw, when he posted on Twitter, we don't have a single field office in a battleground state yet. The election is less than 200 days away, all right? I mean, I get frustrated that we think this thing is one with memes, and it is not. We make some killer memes. I've shared quite a few here this week in my view, okay? But there is no meme, brother, that we're going to construct, and the other side is going to say, oh, snap, I am ashamed. Let me stop stealing elections and mutilating kids and dismembering babies and leaving borders wide open for human traffickers and fentanyl dealers because Ultra MAGA 44 Magnum just made me just internally melt with this killer meme they created. No, 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 no. And this, you know, the only thing that's going to counter a long march through the institutions is a counter march through the institutions. That's the only thing that's going to counter it. We're not going to meme our way through this. We're not going to slogan our way through it. We're not going to Fox News, the brothers be flipping. I've seen that every election, no matter what Republican gets nominated. Finally, the blacks will leave the reservation. The lies we'll just tell boomer audiences that they just been getting off on for 40 years are just, we need to win. And I think to win, we should stop doing the things that previously lost.
An obvious question here is, Trump has to know all this. Why are they following the same game plan, at least in so far as we can see it, that they followed the previous two elections? What's going on here?
I don't know. I can tell you during COVID, I exercised names many of your audience would know. Every contact I have to try to get their attention. I had friends working high in the Trump administration, sharing with them the data that I was looking at with COVID to counter the narrative. And they would take it and it would go nowhere. Finally, after months of this, we were able to get Scott Atlas on his radar. Enough of us put him on, and enough of us gave him a platform that he hired him. And then I you should interview Scott Atlas sometime if you have it. Let him tell you the stories of what life was like in the Trump White House, where Trump didn't attend a single COVID meeting of the coronavirus task force? Not a single one. Even if Trump had just showed up the very first time on Scott's first day and said, when he speaks, that's me. When he listens, everything he says is coming back to me. So understand, I'm not going to be here every day. I got other things to do. This guy is sitting in my seat. So come correct. Even if he had just done that for 5 minutes the first time, lots of things might have been different. He didn't. He ceded it all to Mike Pence, and Mike Pence was completely owned by Debbie Birx and the demonic one, Anthony Fauci. And he spent months in there when he could have saved. There was still time. It was August. He could have still saved that presidency and that election. And they just never listened to him. They just tuned him out. It was almost like they were hostages who thought that they couldn't. Their goose was cooked, and there was nothing they could do. So I don't know the answer. I'm sympathetic with the lawfare that's going against him. What they've tried to do to his personal fortune, I think, is one of the most un-American things I've ever seen. So I'll give him some grace and that mercy that maybe that is. I can't even imagine the amount of, you probably got generations of family members like, hey, that's our inheritance. That's probably taken a lot of your time, I would imagine. But there are pros there. You know, Susie Wiles and some of these other people, this is not their first rodeo that could be running the show there. And I have no idea how it's possible they would not have a single field office in a battleground state as we head into May, an election that's exactly 6 months from today, 26 weeks. That blows my mind. You know, Donald Trump has his faults. I'm not shy in expressing them when I think they get in the way of what I believe. But I don't expect him to be omniscient or omnipresent. And so there are people there, while he's up there in those New York courts fighting for his freedom, that should be doing their damn jobs. And from what I'm seeing, they're not.
Well, Steve, I'm so grateful for you joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it. Brother, you need to go get yourself a cup of coffee and perk up just a little bit. You really do. I don't know if you're aware of this, but you come off with a real lethargy, a lack of energy. I know it's later in the day. You've already done. You just recorded your own show.
Right.
And I know you're a little tired, but man, go get some espresso or something.
Next time you invite me back on, I will do my best to have gotten a good night's sleep beforehand. So I bring a little bit more energy.
Hey, one little final shot for you. I have to ask, is Connor Stallions running the sign stealing op for the Democrat Party?
Connor Stallions is a great American. He's a great American.
For those who don't know what I'm talking about, Steve there, he is wearing, I believe you're wearing a Michigan
yes.
Wolverines.
I'm here in my Michigan
polo there.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I'm a Bama fan, and Michigan just beat a few months ago, beat Alabama for the national title.
I was there.
In college there. Football. Yeah. Were you really?
Phenomenal.
Well, congratulations to you.
Phenomenal experience.
He was there.
Rose Bowl.
Yeah, he was there to see Michigan win their first national title in, 25, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And Connor Stallions is a guy around whom there's been all this speculation about sign stealing and this kind of thing. So I just, as a Bama fan, I just had to try to get in a little shot here for some kind of self-respect. But congratulations to you and to the Michigan Wolverines on a national title.
You all got six of them. I think you're going to be okay. We can have one. I think you're going to be all right.
17.
Yeah.
17 of them.
Well,
all right, brother, you take
care.
Well,
it's in the Saban era, but yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, my friend.
You
take
got it,
care.
Brother. Thank you.
Well, I tell you, Steve comes on and he brings it, doesn't he? He was bringing the heat, and he was bringing some Red Bull too. I think he takes that stuff intravenously. I am pretty sure of that. Christy Noem and this whole episode, it really does reveal to us how warped our ideas are in the United States as it relates to life, how we perceive life, how we evaluate it, how we value life. And that to me is the big revelation as it relates to this particular controversy. Should you be condemning, and listen, you can condemn Christy Noem for a great many things, but should you be condemning her for shooting the dog? Or should you save that energy and direct it towards those people who regard human life as having no real value at all, and they are enacting it in global legislation? This has been Ideas Have Consequences with me, Larry Alex Staunton.